The J Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, I'd better begin this episode by giving you props for your stellar performance on the K-League United's ACL preview live stream last week. That looked like a lot of fun to be a part of.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it was. It was really good to just kind of get an insight into how the other teams are shaping up across the continent. I mean, this season, more than most, I've just been focused on the J-League because it's just been thick and fast. So it was great to get in, to kind of learn about these other teams, how their preparations are going. I wish we had a little bit more time, but I mean, we can't all do 2-hour podcasts, can we?
Yeah, we do give that a nudge from time to time, don't we? But stellar work by Ryan Walters and the K-League United crew, assembling an all-star cast with Sam obviously included in that, and getting through all four of the East Zone groups in pretty smart order, and covered in a lot of detail. So well done to all involved again. And Sam, I don't know, we slightly glass half empty there. Were you trying to lure the guests from the other countries into a false sense of security about how the J-League clubs are going to go over in Qatar?
Maybe in a sense, but there's not a lot until this weekend's performance from Yokohama. There's not been a lot to really get excited about the three ACL clubs from the J-League. I don't know if it's just one eye on the competition, they're kind of easing into it. But yeah, I just didn't have too much positive to really say about the way the teams are playing. But I just think the best thing about the Japanese sides is that they started the campaign. They've got 6 points or 4 points between them, so they've got at least that buffer. So hopefully they can pick up form as the competition continues and then be at their best come the latter stages. But yeah, I'm not 100% confident on their chances at the moment.
All right, well, we shall see in due course. Of course, as is customary these days, all three ACL clubs were in action at last Wednesday night, and there was also a game made up between Hiroshima and Nagoya. And interestingly, the home teams last Wednesday, all four of them won at home, and they all kept clean sheets. In derby action, Gunma Osaka beat Kobe 1-0 with Patrick scoring just before the half hour. And Shonan stunned Yokohama F. Marinos by the same scoreline, with Mitsuki Saito netting the only goal of the game just past the hour. Yes, Hiroshima beat Nagoya 2-0. They scored early through Leandro Pereira and late through Tsukasa Morishima. While at Ajinomoto Stadium, Kensuke Nagoya's 21st-minute goal gave FC Tokyo their first win in five games at 1-0 over Sapporo. So, okay, there you go, listeners. We've managed to round up last midweek's action in about 2 minutes compared to the 35 it took us in last week's podcast. Just a little more housekeeping before we welcome in our guest. The Kashiwa versus Oita Match Day 27 clash was, of course, postponed on Saturday, but we're pleased to report that at this stage, Racer looks set to return to league action this coming Saturday when they're scheduled, at least, to host Tosu in Match Day 28. So that's good news. And other good news, Raysol related, is that the Levain Cup final at Raysol versus FC Tokyo has been rescheduled now by the J-League, although there might be some not too wrapped with the day in particular that was chosen. It's now on a Monday, the 4th of January. Most schools and companies should still be on their New Year holiday, so hopefully that won't affect too many supporters who have tickets and want to go. And in related news, I'm pleased to announce that I will be providing the commentary as was originally scheduled for the J-League's international YouTube feed. That has been requested and I have accepted. So, pleased to let you all know about that. All right, well, that's all our housekeeping out of the way, I believe. So let's welcome in Stuart Woodward. Stuart is our regular Yokohama F. Marinos correspondent, of course. Stuart, I suppose a mixed bag for your side this week. I mentioned the loss at Shonan last Wednesday. But we wanted to have you on before F. Marinos departed for the ACL. And surely there's no better time than after a huge home win over Urawa. Welcome back to the pod, and how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. Yes, I actually went to the Shonan match and left the stadium pretty quickly after the match. It was just one of those matches where it didn't click, and Shonan were doing their best to make sure that we couldn't play the way that we usually play. So it's a good strategy for them, and they picked up their goal from a corner. We didn't get any more chances in that match at all, really.
Fair enough. But, you certainly did turn on the style on Saturday in what's obviously come around really quickly, Stuart. Yeah, but it's ended up being your final home game of the J-League season. Yeah, you've obviously only got two more games left to play. One this Wednesday away at Kawasaki, and then another Kanagawa derby at Yokohama FC with the presumably the B team on the final day of the season. So, has that snuck up on you that it's the home slate is now complete?
Well, it seems it's been a long half year. Basically, every weekend and Wednesday for, I think it was 22 matches they played in a row. So, I'm kind of glad to have a rest, actually. You know, I haven't been doing much around the house and been very busy for the whole of the season. A great way to finish the season. And of course, you like to go out with a bang at the very last home match. In years past, you know, there's been some quite a sad end of the season if you lose at home, and then the team have to come out and the manager gives his speech, and it could be quite a long farewell, you know, end of the season ceremony there if you've lost the match. So this time, yes, it was all celebrations, and it felt a very nice way to end the season at home.
Yeah, so we haven't actually given the scoreline, have we? It finished at Yokohama F. Marinos 6, Urawa Reds 2 on Saturday at the Nissan Stadium. And Sam, I don't know, had you felt an outburst like this was coming from F. Marinos? Obviously not the way they'd handled Shonan on Wednesday, but they'd sort of been bubbling under the surface, and you wondered the something like this was in the cards before they left for Qatar, or had you just been assuming that they were keeping their powder dry before they flew off?
Yeah, I didn't really see this coming, especially when you look at the team sheet, because they put out what was pretty much a second-string side as well. I mean, Marcos Jr. wasn't there, Eric wasn't there, the two main centre-backs weren't there. So you looked at that and you thought, OK, Urawa have got a really good chance here. But I think the kind of B team, as it might be, or the second string, they definitely put in performances. I thought Ado Anayu was fantastic. I thought Kota Mizunuma really played well. And those players kind of staked their claim, and they thought, OK, we got off to the ACL, we should be in this first team and we'll show you. And that's sort of how it came across. I think they were helped by some shoddy Urawa defending, which, I mean, I'm not a Urawa supporter, but even I was furious at some of their defending. But take nothing away from the way Marinos played. I thought, I wouldn't say it was coming, but it was a very good performance, and it was a timely performance. It gives them confidence, especially if they can go and get something against Kawasaki in their final game before they head off. Then really they could be in buoyant mood going into the resumption of the Champions League.
Indeed. So, the hosts made a lightning start, a ball around the corner in the second minute from the previously mentioned Kota Mizunuma released Junior Santos one-on-one with Takuya Iwanami, and he turned the Reds defender inside out before finishing crisply past Shusaku Nishikawa at his near post. Reds almost hit back in the ninth minute, but ex-F Marinos man Martinez saw his chip over a stranded Powell Obina Obi come back off the bar. And then in the space of 5 minutes, the hosts were 3-0 up after Daizen Maeda arrived at the back post to head in a Mizunuma cross that had evaded four players in the centre. And then right back Ryuta Koike raced on to also previously mentioned Ado Onaewu through ball and clipped his finish in off Nishikawa's right-hand post. So, Stuart, quite a barnstorming opening to the game then. It could have been 1-0. If Martinez's shot perhaps had a kiss the bar on its way in rather than hitting it and coming back out. But, you certainly made the Reds pay, and 3-0 up inside 15 minutes. You must have been buzzing.
Yeah, I was really, really happy at that point. I always think that, you know, had the other goal had Urawa scored the goal at that time, the match might have been a lot more even. And it was really just a surprise, and definitely a little bit down to the mentality that the players go out and once they get in a role, they tend to really crank it up. And as a friend mentioned, said, Urawa fan mentioned, we were playing so badly, we made you look like Brazil. But actually, we play like that all the time. But sometimes the final score doesn't represent the play that's been going on in the 90 minutes.
Indeed, indeed. And now, F. Marino's keeper, Paul Obina Obi, certainly had an interesting afternoon, Sam. Do you want to talk the listeners through the own goal that, saw Reds pull a goal back? Because, I'm going to have a hard time. I'm going to have a hard time describing it, I think, because it's certainly one for the comedy files.
I can try. Yeah, it was comic relief, and it was the second time that Obi had come out off his line. You have to be a sweeper keeper when you play for Marinos, and this is his first game for them, so you expected there were going to be a few dodgy moments. When for the Martinez shot earlier, it was one where Obi had come off his line. He'd done well actually, but he passed it out to Tiraton, who wasn't really paying attention, so he was caught out then with the chip onto the bar. This time he does it again, but he tries to clear it, and Makito Ito is just helpless. I mean, the ball is just fired at him. There's nothing he can do about it. It just hits him, and he scores an own goal off his back, I think, from 25 yards. I don't think he'll ever score anything like that again, but... Yeah, it was just a bit of a horror show for him. I don't really blame the goalkeeper too much, because that's what he's going to be asked to do. I mean, he's not been in this situation before. He's been playing for Tochigi on loan, which it's not quite the same necessarily, the pressure or the kind of manner of this game at like Nissan Stadium, quite a large crowd as well. So I do feel for him. But it was just a complete mess. But it's just something that has happened to many goalkeepers at Yokohama before and will happen to many further goalkeepers down the line.
Yes, indeed. So, Stuart, are there big raps on Mr. Obi amongst the F. Marinos supporters? I mean, yeah, I can't claim to know a massive amount about him, but, he made the highlight package for this game for a couple of ordinary reasons.
Yes, Obi joined this year straight from university, and I think he had initial training with the club, and then at the first chance, I think they sent him out to Sam said to Tochigi, and he was playing as a starting member goalkeeper for them. So I saw him the other day in one Tochigi match, and it looked pretty good. But I think after we had the little bit of the goalkeeper injury problem, they brought him back sharply. And so I'd only seen him play once before, I think in a cup match, and last year, because he came at the end of end of the summer last year, when the university graduates get their chance to join the clubs early. And it was really like comedy moment. Everybody was laughing, like we were laughing because we're three goals up at that time, and just to have that one go in. But I had a sudden kind of thought that this is going to be the match that ends 3-3. So I was really happy when the next goal went in to restore the 3-goal lead. So, yes, it was a kind of a funny moment. But I quickly said about that. It was a typical, the comedy game moment.
Yes, indeed. So that was the own goal off Ito in the 31st minute. But yes, yep. Stuart's nerves were calmed just 6 minutes later, where probably one of the examples of Reds defending, leading Sam to pull his hair out when Junior Santos was given time and space to firstly chest down a Kota Mizunuma cross in from the right and then spin in the box before rifling past Nishikawa under next to no pressure whatsoever. So, 4-1 before half time, and three assists in the first half to Mizunuma, but he wasn't done there. 20 minutes into the second half, he got a goal of his own when he exchanged passes with Aro Naiwu and scored a terrific fifth for F. Marinos, stroking home across Nishikawa and into the far corner. Then in the final exchanges, Martinez got his goal when he tapped in from fellow former F. Marinos man Ryosuke Yamanaka's cross in the 90th minute, but Santos put the icing on the cake and wrapped up his hat-trick in stoppage time, blasting home through Nishikawa's legs after cutting in from the left. So, yes, a very satisfying afternoon's work for Yokohama F. Marinos. A 6-2 win, as we said, to finish off their home slate. So before we move on to, what your expectations are for the ACL, Stuart, and obviously with the caveat that this is the craziest season of all time for so many reasons, and the team has been playing, as you said, every weekend and then midweek for basically 3.5 months. So how are you feeling about the fact that, you're seventh in the table? Obviously, the defending champions at the start of the season, you would have expected a lot better, I presume. But are you just chalking this season down to just the chaotic nature of it, and the players have acquitted themselves as best they could?
Yes, I think so. Like, there's nothing really that we could have done about this season, just the way, as you say, things unfolded. And I would definitely like to see another full season of Ange Postecoglou's football, because this season we were consistently inconsistent for the whole of the season. So that was a real kind of up and down, but we're looking probably to slip down a few places, I think, as the teams above us catch up with their games. But I'm not sure that anybody can catch up with our goal total, which only exceeded by Kawasaki. So we're hoping to get a few more goals before the end of the season to bring that up a little more. But in that match, I thought Junior Santos and even Dyson really came into their force. You know, great heading goal by Dyson. Like I can't see how that was any thought went into that at all. He was just totally instinctively headed that in, because any of the players that were in front of him could have got that. But one thing I was going to say, that Junior Santos, a little bit like Matias last year, coming in from another team and doing much better at Marinos than they had at the previous team. I just read an interview about him the other day, and he's 26, and he's only been a professional for 3 years. And from his interview, he said that he was playing amateur football in Brazil and was invited by a team that he knew to play in a match, and they offered him 2,000 yen and he scored a goal. So the next match, the fee went up to 5,000 yen and he scored a goal against that. And after a few matches, he was up to 20,000 yen a match and became professional. And previously, 3 years ago, he was a carpenter. So I had no idea about his history. So and then to be picked up by Kashua and come over to Japan. That's also an amazing transition for him. And you know, he even, I think he said, you know, he wasn't living in such an urban area as Yokohama. So it's probably the first. Coming to Tokyo, it was the first city that he'd ever lived in. There we go.
All right. Well, interesting stuff. Yeah. Obviously didn't know that myself. So There you go. Coming soon to J Talk Films. A new documentary. Sounds great. Yeah, you can fill us in on the full story, Stuart. Terrific stuff. All right. Well, so the season as a whole, Sam, again, we can't be too critical, I suppose. If Matty knows that Kobe and FC Tokyo have obviously played so many games. It's in quick succession. It's really, as we've said many times, it's unprecedented. But overall, I mean, you know, we have to judge. We're here to judge the players on and teams on the results they get on the pitch. So I don't think there's any question that as a whole, the season is a disappointment for Yokohama F. Marinos. I mean, they have had real highlights, and this Saturday was obviously a great way to finish their home slate. But overall, how do you think this incarnation of F. Marinos will be remembered, Sam?
Well, I think Stuart said it right when they were just consistently inconsistent. Just the way that they have been. I mean, their performances on their day, as you say, can be fantastic, but there are too many occasions this season, and I'm sure it's the schedule and the various injuries in defence as well, but they just went back a step, I thought, to the way they were playing in 2018, where occasionally, and a bit too often this season, not as much as it was in 2018, but they just shoot themselves in the foot a little bit and they cause their own downfall. So I think next season, assuming Postecoglou stays, which I think he will do, I assume they keep the bulk of this squad, which again I think they will do, I think they will develop into a bit more of a consistent team. They'd be right up there towards the top of the table. But I would agree that you'd probably just chalk this off as just what could we do at the moment. We've just had such a horrible schedule. I think Tokyo have dealt with it the best of the three, but that might be just because they more naturally are a defensive team. You can get into that unit quite well, and it's without the coaching sessions you might get in midweek, it's easier, I think, just to play Tokyo style than it is to develop the Marinos style. Like, there was a time in the middle of the season when he wanted to switch to three at the back, but it didn't really work, and when you haven't got any real training sessions in between games to work on that, it's so difficult to develop the style. So I thought, yeah, it was just a really difficult season for Marinos to ever really compete at the top of the table. But hopefully this season isn't a bust. They go into the Champions League 6 points already. They were fantastic in their two games that they've already played. So I think they would go in with confidence after this result. And I think Marinos at their best can beat anyone in Asia. So I think they should be aiming to win that competition and be a fantastic season if they do. So yeah, hopefully for them, this isn't just a write-off season, but in the league, at least, I think it has been.
Yeah, so at home, I mean, it's obviously 17 played now, with having played everybody in the league at either Nissan Stadium or Mitsuzawa. 9 wins, 2 draws, and 6 losses. And tellingly, of the 6 teams above F. Marinos in the table, the only one they beat at home was Nagoya. They lost the other 5 games against the teams above them. So, again, just one of those seasons. We'll have to chalk it down to that. And we obviously, after this Wednesday, and obviously a huge game for both clubs at Todoroki, another Kanagawa derby, Kawasaki versus Yokohama F. Marinos, the team jets off to Qatar, Stuart. And as Sam has mentioned, a perfect 2 wins from 2 from your opening group stage games. So, that's obviously a huge positive, and 6 points in the bank is fantastic to take away. And we would love to see more performances like the one you put in on Saturday over there to really showcase this side to the continent as a whole. So, what are your expectations then for what will transpire over in Qatar?
Well, in some ways, I think we might do better than the league, because the style of play and just the way that, as you said, you know, we can score goals and have a match like that match on Saturday, and that was very similar to the matches against Jeonbuk and against Sydney too. I think they were just totally blown away. But once we got going and started to, you know, play in that way, and I remember the Sydney newspaper said, you know, they made our team look like they're training dummies, you know. So it could work. It could work out for us. Now, I don't know whether the teams that we've already played against have learned something, or they're on better form now, or whether we will have a similar result against them in the away matches. And I'm not really sure of the level of Shanghai. So yeah, I'm quite confident, but I wouldn't like to jinx it. So I'm quietly confident, and just hope that things go well, and looking forward to it. But one thing that I really don't know is who is on the plane. Who are the members that are currently registered for the ACL, or even what the rules are, whether you register at the start of the year and that those players that were originally registered are the ones to go. So that is a little bit of an announcement that we're waiting for.
I was about to ask you pretty much on that. I'm pretty convinced that you're allowed to change your squad up. I know that the A-League teams, for example, they've got completely new squads at the end of their season. So you can definitely name a new squad. So at the start of the season, you named as your foreign players, it was Thiago Martins, Marcos Junior, Eric, and then Tiraton. With Junior Santos's form, would you try and sneak him in? And if so, who would you have to drop out if you did so?
Well, that's a good question. You know, at the start of the year, I would have said like Thiago was really a necessary player to have there, and same for Marcos Junior. I think at the moment or the last week or two, Junior Santos looks like he's in better scoring form than Eric, and I know that Eric just had a baby this week, second baby this week, so he might not want to go, you know, he might prefer to stay home, but who knows. Either of them on their day will do the job very well, so yeah, I really don't know. I think it's a toss-up between Eric and Junior Santos. So that's my prediction.
Interesting. Ben, a same question to you, actually, while we're on the subject. Obviously, you had Leandro, Diego Oliveira and Adeilton as the three Brazilians that went last time, but that was when Kento Hashimoto was available in midfield. So would you be getting Arthur Silva in, and if so, would you then be taking, I'd assume, Adeilton? Would that be the way you'd go?
Yeah, nah, sorry, Arthur, I think you're going to have to miss the plane, buddy. Yeah, I think Adeilton is, he's just too important to us off the bench. I wouldn't want to be the one to tell Arthur that he has to stay at home, but for me, I think you have to take the three forwards, and then just try and muddle through in midfield, which is what we have been doing for a large part of this season. Other Tokyo supporters might disagree and think we need a bit more steel in there. But I'd be sticking with the three front men. And well, Sam, I'll throw both questions right back at you because they are excellent questions and poses. So yeah, what would you do first for F. Marinos? Is it Thiago Martins perhaps? Yeah, now slightly on the fringe, and they might be able to get by without him.
It's a really difficult question. I would definitely if Eric is available and wants to go, I'd definitely have him there and Marcos Junior. I think they're the best players there. They're ones that you can rely on for just a little bit of magic. But you've got a massive problem at either end, because I think Thiago Martins and Hatanaka are so important as a centre-back pairing. I think if you take one out, when you bring in Ito or you bring in Saneto, I think it does really weaken that back line, especially when really you're not playing a first-choice goalkeeper either, because Park has had to be shipped out. So Thiago Martins is really important. But then if you don't have Junior Santos up front, you don't really have an out-and-out goal scorer. When Anaya was played up there, he hasn't really looked like a clinical goal scorer. So it's really difficult. I think Marinos' setup and the way that his philosophy is, I think he might just go Junior Santos and say, we'll score one more than you. But yeah, that's a really difficult conundrum for them. For Tokyo, I would be more inclined to go with Arthur Silva just because I don't trust Takahagi to be able to play that role consistently. I just think it's a little bit weak in that midfield, especially as a Dalton is a substitute. So you're going to have to say to Diego and Leandro and Nagai, we're really relying on you. We've got not a lot behind you. You need to sort yourself out. So I would just about side with Arthur Silva. But again, it's quite a toss-up and I can see the argument either way.
Yeah, I suppose we do have a couple of extra options in attack with Hara and Tagawa that, could be a possibility. So, yeah, perhaps you might have swayed me there. I certainly don't want to be relying too much on Takagi. But, we shall see. Sam, are there any nuggets that you could glean from the K-League United stream last week that you might be able to let Stuart and or all of the other F Marino supporters know about? The other teams in F Marino's Group H, of course, are Gyeongbuk of South Korea, Sydney FC of Australia, and Shanghai SIPG of the Chinese Super League, who F Marino's will be playing a double header against when they touch down in Qatar.
Well, I can't, as we knew when this draw was made, it was the toughest draw. It was the three league winners at the time. Shanghai, I think, have had a fairly poor season by their standards. They lost to Jiangsu in the third place playoff in China this weekend. So I think you're kind of getting them at the right time. You've already shown against Gyeongbuk and Sydney, although Gyeongbuk at the time may have been slightly underdone. You just played them off the park, so I don't think you should be fearing any of these teams. Just looking at Shanghai's squad, though, it looks a very good one on paper. You've got Oscar, you've got Hulk, you've got Aaron Moy in midfield, I think it's going to be interesting. Very good player. Not necessarily as they were mentioned on the pod, he was not necessarily the usual type of signing that Shanghai would make. Not necessarily box office name, but a terrific player. He can control the midfield, so but Postecoglou will know all about him, so that would be an interesting battle when that comes out. I think I'm pretty confident that Yokohama will get through the group. I think Shanghai have had a difficult time of it. They've had to play quite a lot of fixtures in the same kind of way that Yokohama have, and I think having that victory already against Gyeongbuk has just puts you in such a good position. So yeah, I'd be pretty confident going into that group. And Sydney as well, with the A-League teams having just their season ended a while ago. They haven't had any build up to it. They didn't see, from what I was hearing on that podcast, it didn't seem like the A-League clubs really wanted to be there either. So I think, yeah, you can take advantage of that and get through that group. And then once you're through, who knows where you can go. But I'd be pretty hopeful for Marinos as maybe the J-League's best hope of getting through to another final, because, yeah, the J-League has done very well in recent years.
Yeah, most definitely. And, Shanghai obviously have a bit of catching up to do. They haven't played any of their group stage games as yet. So they play Sydney this Thursday and then Gyeongbuk on Sunday before the doubleheader against F Marinos begins next Wednesday. So, Stuart, thanks again for joining us on this week's episode. And, hopefully F Marinos will make it into the latter stages of the competition and we can have you on before a huge maybe quarterfinal or semi-final in the ACL. But, for now, again, congrats again on the big win over Reds on Saturday. And, enjoy F. Marinos' exploits in the ACL. And, we hope to speak to you again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed being on again. And, I hope I come back on again in as such a happy mood as I am today.
All right, then. Thanks again to Stuart Woodward. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will round up the other games played on the weekend in J1 Match Day 27. Okay, so as we mentioned at the start of the episode, Kashiwa versus Oita was postponed from Saturday. So that leaves us with seven games left to review from Match Day 27. And let's start with, well, what basically has to go down, Sam, as the biggest upset of the J1 season. I'll run through some figures for you. Sendai, who travelled to Gunma Osaka, were winless in their last 17 league games, a run that had seen them lose 12 and draw 5, plummeting to the foot of the table. And in fact, they only bothered with six on the bench against Gumba, who themselves were on a 12-game unbeaten run, winning 10 of them, having roared up the table from 8th to 2nd. So what happened on Saturday? Well, of course, Sendai rocked up to the Panasonic Stadium and battered Gumba 4-0. Yes, that's right, the 18th team in the league beat the team in 2nd by 4 clear goals. And, well, yeah, Sam, I hope you got on Shun Nagasawa for the Ballon d'Or after the first of his 3 goals of the afternoon. The big man returned to face the club, who, of course, he scored 36 goals for in all competitions between 2015 and 2018. But, nobody in Gumba Black and Blue would have been expecting a virtuoso performance from the big man.
I've been dreading this. Full credit to Shun Nagasawa. He took his goals well. I thought the first goal, it wasn't much movement, but it was enough movement to get away from Shoji, found himself some space in the box, and the finish is very good into the top corner. But really, the Gumba defending, I think if you concede 3 goals to Nagasawa, you have to look at yourselves. And Gen Shoji was back in this, and I was such a big fan of Gen Shoji, still am to a degree, but he hasn't performed that well since returning to the J-League with Gumba. I think maybe the fitness concerns have not really helped him, but for the first goal, Nagasawa takes the step out, and Shoji, for whatever reason, goes backwards the other way and just leaves him far too much space. So that was the first goal. The second goal, comes from a corner, and for whatever reason, young striker Shoji Toyama is marking Shun Nagasawa, and he's the obvious aerial threat, so you'd think Shoji would take him. I don't know if I'm just picking on him, but you'd think the experienced centre-back would take the biggest aerial threat, but they didn't. No one did in the end, and Nagasawa has a free header just in front of Higashiguchi, so he heads into an open goal. And then the third goal, I can't complain about the defending. Nagasawa does very well. He gets across his man. It's a very good header. It's like the perfect sort of Shun Nagasawa goal. And it was kind of you could see he had confidence. So, yeah, very well done to him for his hat trick. But there are questions about this entire performance from Gumba. And it started really with just the team selection. I know that they've got quite a few games this season, so you have to rest players to a degree. But they just took too many players out, especially when Idiguchi was already missing through injury, to then just rest Usami and Onose and Patrick and Kim. It was just too many. It was like they were taking Vigalta for granted. And Vigalta came into this game with so many injuries that they were only able to name 6 on the bench. One of those was Shimamate, who was not fit. He only came on for the last minute. And they just had a kind of put-together team. And they just thought, they came to it, they probably saw that Gumba were taking them a little bit lightly. And they just really turned up for the first time in ages this season. But it was really good to see. They just went at Gumba. They were fully deserving of this victory. It was a fantastic performance from them. Obviously led by the greatest striker in the league, Nagasawa. But Quenko, I thought, was fantastic down the left. He was involved in the first goal. And everyone played above themselves. And it was refreshing to see from Sendai. And, yeah, terrific victory for them. But Gumba, when you're in a position to really stamp your authority on the Champions League places and the Emperor's Cup, I thought this was a turgid performance.
Yeah, I guess every now and then the J-League throws up odd results like this. And nobody could have seen this coming, the form that that both teams are in, obviously going in opposite directions. And Sendai were on it right from the start, judging from the highlights, Sam. I mean, there was a really early save for Higashiguchi from a shot from Takumi Sasaki in just the 3rd minute. And then, once they got their tails up for Galta, I guess they just proved too much for Gumba to handle, which is stunning. The quality of their performance and the consistency of their performances in the last couple of months. And then to not turn up at home against the bottom club is it's a black mark against their season, a really really disappointing one for their supporters. And yeah, I'm sure they got a dressing down from the coach at the end of it. But we don't want to take anything away from Sendai, but at the same time, we feel like we have to give Gumba a bit of a dressing down because, as you say, Sam, they'd worked themselves up into second, clearly the front runners for an Emperor's Cup semi-final berth, but then to throw in a performance in inverted commas like that is or bordering on unforgivable. But we all know what Shun Nagasawa's capable of on his day. His day is once every 6 or 7 years, but unfortunately for Gumba, they were on the receiving end of this one, and the big man, what a performance and a day he will never forget, I'm sure, against his former club. And it ended up being a pretty dirty Saturday, didn't it, Sam, for Osaka sides in general, because Cerezo rocked up to lowly Shimizu, and they themselves are on the receiving end of a pretty decent hiding here. This game was in the balance until very, very late on, but ultimately Shimizu have beaten Cerezo Osaka 3-1 to make it to 2-2 for Hiroaki Hiraoka since he replaced Peter Klimovsky. So, it's obviously very early doors to make any sort of judgments on Hiraoka, Sam, but have you noticed he's done anything different from Klimovsky in his two games in charge to get these two results? Or is it just a culmination of Klimovsky's methods finally bearing fruit under another manager? Or, has he really shaken things up since he's come in, Hiraoka?
I wouldn't say shaken things up, but he's simplified everything. They've gone back to a system that they know how to play. It's how they've played for a number of years. It's back to the team that there's no chopping and changing, really. He's got this settled team. They're just not, it's all like, because Klimovsky was obviously trying to implement his style, and they didn't really have the players for it. And he's gone to the defence and says, don't bother with that, you're not quite good enough for it, just play it a little bit more simply, we'll get the ball forward. But they've taken like the positive bits of Klimovsky's attacking play, because Shimizu always caused problems for teams, but just didn't, for whatever reason, have that finishing edge, or only did late in a game. So they've improved on that. It's only two games, and I mean, you get that new manager bump, so I don't know if this is sustainable. But I just think the simplifying of everything has really helped them. They've got Kaneko and Nishizawa back on the wings. Like, Kaneko was in and out because they were playing wing back, so he didn't really fit the system. But I think Shimizu at their best are when Nishizawa and Kaneko have the ball out wide. They kind of link with their strikers. They've got Goto back into the team more often. He's linking up quite nicely with Carlinho. So I just think they've gone back to basics, and that's serving them well, at least in the short term. Whether that's like a long-term ploy that will get Shimizu up the table, I'm not really convinced. But in the last couple of games, they've played pretty well, and they've deserved the victory again against Cerezo. I thought Cerezo were pretty poor.
Yes, all right then. So Espols took a pretty sensational lead 4 minutes into the second half when Renato Augusto ended up bicycle kicking home from inside the six-yard box after an action-packed run from 30, 40 yards out. He was bundling people over. He was doing up to all sorts. And, it ended up with an overhead kick from inside the six-yard box. So, you might want to check that out on the highlights, listeners. I don't really think I've done that too much justice. Cerezo equalised in the 67th minute when Hiroshi Kiyotake headed in from a yard out from a cross from a Tatsuhiro Sakamoto. Sakamoto's a name we haven't mentioned too much in, the last month or so, Sam. Forgive me, he might have been out injured for all I know, but has he gone off the boil, or has he indeed been out of the team?
No, he's been playing. It's just really that Cerezo as an attacking force have gone off the boil. I don't know if you remember, a couple of weeks ago, Toyokawa came off the bench and scored two fantastic goals. Mm. So they then decided that he's going to play up front instead of Bruno Mendes. But Toyokawa doesn't really offer anything up front. He scored those goals, but as a presence in the box, he's not really there. He's not that clinical a finisher. So they've lacked that player in the area to cross to, that in Bruno Mendes, who is I mean, he's not necessarily the most prolific player, but he's definitely a target to aim for. He's definitely someone to play off. And they haven't really had that. I mean, they got the goal by Sakamoto crossing to Kiyotake, which that shouldn't really be the case. It should be that striker in there. So I don't think he's been really helped by the manager's change of personnel up there. But again, he'd been so consistent, it was always going to have a drop-off in form. So I think that's also a part of it. Him and Kiyotake have not quite lived up to their previous form, but they can't be relied upon it week in, week out to be the only players that are getting Cerezo over the line. They've done so well to get them to where they are. They just need other players to step up, and they haven't in the last couple of games.
No, fair enough then. All right, well, so this game was 1-1 heading into the last 5 minutes, and we know about S-Pulse's penchant for late goals this season. They've usually come, of course, when they're two or three goals down in games, but this time with things level, they pounced in the last 5 minutes. Firstly, Keita Nakamura fired home an inch-perfect finish just out of the reach of Kim Jin-hyun in the 86th minute. And then with the S-Pulse, backed up at the edge of their own box, they countered deep in stoppage time. And after Tirasil had raced clear and then saw his shot saved by Kim, he selflessly passed the ball back for Carlinhos to sweep home from distance. So this time, late goals did the trick for S-Pulse and sealed an excellent home win for them. For Cerezo, it slightly dints their chances of making the top three. And the second place Emperor's Cup semi-final spot looks a bit of a hill to climb for them. But if Gumba are going to turn in more performances like they did on Saturday, well, then Cerezo will probably walk into second, for all I know. But, so it wasn't a great Saturday for the Osaka sides. We'll move on to the other games then, Sam. And, if you don't mind, you obviously didn't want to talk about Shun Nagasawa. I don't really want to talk a great deal about Nagoya 1, FC Tokyo 0. And believe me, though, listeners, I was prepared to say the same thing before Nagoya scored a 95th-minute penalty through Mateus. I was just left with the thought, especially as the second half just seemed to drag on and on, Sam, that this was not a very good advertisement for J1. If these two teams were both up at the sharp end of the table, then it was a pretty dire advertisement for the league. Not a great deal happened until, Mateus' shot cannoned off Yojiro Takahagi's raised arm in the box and the referee pointed to the spot.
Yeah, it wasn't a great game. I thought first half Nagoya a little bit better. They had a few opportunities in and around the box, and Gabriel Xavier flicked one to Maeda, but he went left-footed instead of right-footed into the side netting. But yeah, really, I think Hatano made a couple of saves and there were a couple of blocked efforts, but nothing really clear-cut. Nagoya had lost Kanazaki to injury in midweek. He's got an ACL and a meniscus injury, so that's 6 to 8 months out for him. They'd already lost Yamasaki, so they weren't really playing with an out-and-out striker, which definitely hindered them in terms of their ability to create and take chances. And Tokyo, they rely on the counter-attack, but it's not really worked the last couple of games. They scored against Sapporo, but the goals have dried up and they don't really look like scoring, especially in this game. I didn't have that feeling that you used to get with Tokyo, and you have done this season, where they're really a threat on the counter and you think every time they come forward they might score, but it didn't really happen in this one. I don't know if they were just going through the motions or maybe Nagoya are just set up in a way that kind of nullified that, and I suppose that's possible. But yeah, it wasn't a great game. It needed something a little bit different to get the goal. There was Mateus at least took on a shot, and then Takahagi, I don't think he can have too many complaints. His arm is raised above as he goes to slide in to block it and it hits him. I mean, if meters is a penalty from a few weeks ago, then this one has to be, and it's just kind of the break that Nagoya needed. It's one that they've got a few times this season when they've sneaked out 1-0 late on and it's kept them in this ACL race, which is, they were looking like on occasion they might drop out of it, but they're right back in third now, so they won't mind how the victory comes. But yeah, it was a disappointing game for neutrals especially.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, Sam, they say these things are even out over the course of the season. Well, I'm waiting. I'm still sitting here waiting for Tokyo to get the rub of the green. But, it's not smart from Takahagi to obviously to go in with his arm up. And, I'm not suggesting Mateus was aiming for his arm, but yeah, got fortunate. And, slotted home the penalty. I guess there was a contentious incident about 10, 12 minutes before that, Sam, when Naoki Maeda was booked for diving in the 81st minute. I didn't really see a conclusive replay. Again, it was slightly foolish from Masato Morishige to kind of slide in as Maeda was dancing around in the box. It was hard to really ascertain whether Morishige had made any contact at all, or whether if there was any that Maeda might have instigated it. But I don't know, what were your thoughts on that? Was it I kind of applauded the referee for showing some guts and booking a player for simulating, if that's what he thought Maeda had done. But what was your take on that incident?
Yeah, I don't think the replays were too helpful, but I rewound it a few times, and I don't think I think the referee's got the decision right, and I agree with you that to applaud the referee for actually booking a player for diving, because too often they just kind of sit on the fence and just wave play on and just don't try not to make a decision as much as they can. So I don't think there was too much contact, if any, on Maeda. I think he's looking for the penalty, so I agree with the yellow card for diving. Very good decision, in my opinion, from the referee. He was definitely looking at it, even though he made quite a convincing appeal for it. So initially I thought, oh, he's so irate, it must be a penalty. But yeah, looking at the replay, I don't think there's much, if any, contact.
Yeah, all right then. Well, all's well that ends well, though, for Grampus. And yes, this 1-0 win has taken them back up to third in the table. Tokyo had risen above Grampus after Tokyo's win and Nagoya's loss last Wednesday, but exchanged positions again. So Grampus have 52 points from 29 games. They're 3 points behind Gumba, but Gumba do have a game in hand on them in the race for second spot and that Emperor's Cup semi-final berth. Tokyo have obviously played 31 games and have 50 points, so they're well and truly out of the hunt for a second spot, you would suggest. All right, well, so we've got 3-1-1 draws to cover, and we'll finish the episode with those, Sam. So let's just quickly do the Kobe nil, Shonan 2 game, because Belmari is suddenly red hot, if you don't mind. 5 unbeaten, 2 draws and 3 straight wins now for Shonan Belmari. They've well and truly hauled themselves off the foot of the table, even with Sendai and Espols winning as well. Belmari have surged on to 23 points after a goalless first half that basically featured really entertaining battles up one end between Belmari keeper Kosei Tani and the Vissel striker Noriaki Fujimoto. Three huge saves from Tani, including two that deflected off him and onto the woodwork and then to safety, while up the other end, Hiroki Ikura managed to keep out two close-range Hiroshi Ibusuki efforts. So, it was a goalless first half, but there was plenty happening at either end. And then, Shonan went and, I wouldn't say ambushed, Sam, but scored two pretty good goals in the last 15 minutes, in particular, Mitsuki Saito's second with 6 minutes to go was, I guess when you're playing against Hiroki Ikura, you're always a chance to score a goal like this, but Saito still got to put it away, hasn't he, from 10 yards inside the Kobe half.
Oh, it was an absolutely magnificent goal. It reminded me of the Florenzi goal, I think, for Roma in the Champions League a couple of years ago. I think, he makes the tackle on Sakai on the right-hand side and then takes one quick look up. He just knows that Ikura has gone wandering somewhere. And, but it's such a perfect effort. It's just flies in just underneath the bar. He couldn't have hit it any better. And I don't know if, even if Ikaru was in a normal position, it was going to be a difficult one for him to deal with. So I just want to give full credit to Saito for just having first the audacity to take that shot on, and then the execution was absolutely sublime. I mean, I think we need another poll out, because I think Mitsuki Saito is definitely in with a shout for goal of the season there. But, and it was just really fitting for what this game, because you look at, you know, on paper, Kobe Shonan, I don't think anyone was thinking, oh, this is going to be a fantastic game, but it was so open, so end-to-end, so exciting. The goalkeepers before then, Ikaru and Tani, as you mentioned, fantastic. The two saves that Tani makes, the one off his leg onto the post from Fujimoto, then there was another one, it was so close range, and he just manages to flick it onto the crossbar. It was an absolutely unbelievable save. I mean, just felt that Fujimoto, there was nothing he could do to score in that game. And then Ikaru at the other end was making save after save as well. So both goalkeepers in general had very good games, and it took two. Even the Okamoto goal is a very good goal, worthy of winning any game, into the top corner. So, yeah, it took two moments of real quality to get past what were two very good goalkeeping performances until then.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, well, Kobe obviously can't wait for Qatar to come soon enough. They're very much struggling to the finish line of the J1 season with the four straight losses now. And, well, they're kind of obviously stuck in mid-table in 11th. But, yeah, Shonan, we've got to give them credit for the way they're plugging on at the end of the season. As I said, five unbeaten. And, yeah, two terrific goals here from Takuya Okamoto. And then, yeah, goal of the season contender, indeed, from Mitsuki Saito, sealing the points at the Noivir Stadium. All right, well, yeah, as we mentioned earlier, 3-1-1 draws to finish off the match day, Sam. But, well, yeah, obviously Kashima Kawasaki, a lot happened in that particular game, but there was also a lot happening in the hours leading up to it, with yet another J1 club affected by a COVID-19 scare, and indeed some players were ruled out of this game at the 11th hour.
Yeah, this was a really interesting situation, because Katsuya Nagato tested positive the evening before the game. And usually in this situation, the J-League, the game has been called off. There was even one in J2 where there was a player at Ehime who tested positive, and it was a very similar situation. And they discussed it with Kofu and the J-League, and they ruled they called the game off. I think it was the Ehime governor was really involved in that and wanted it called off. But Kashima, for whatever reason, have gone ahead with the game. They have said that they had identified the close contacts of Nagato, which were really generally like kind of second string players. They did miss Machida, the first choice centre back, and Araki, who's played occasionally at left wing, but generally there were kind of players they could have done without, which leads some suspicion in my opinion. I hope that it doesn't come out that other players were also contacts, and they may have caught the virus and then perhaps spread it to Kawasaki. I really hope that that's not a situation that unfolds. I don't see why the game was risked. It's not like they've got necessarily full schedules going into the rest of the season. There are three midweek rounds for Kashima and Kawasaki to have replayed this game. So it did surprise me that the game went ahead. So hopefully Kashima have done all due diligence. They know exactly what's what, and they've just acted perfectly, and yeah, this was the correct decision. But yeah, I'm quite concerned that this game went ahead, and I don't think it should be a practice that is followed by any other team.
Yeah, that's really concerning, isn't it? And yeah, surely there was some... well, I guess they must have satisfied all the J-League protocols, because, yeah, the game took place, but it sounds very ropey indeed. So, yeah, stand by for, well, hopefully not more any cases coming out of Antlers, but, yeah, you'd have to imagine that will be likely in the days to come. So, well, yeah, on the pitch, though, Sam, I mean, they did turn in a pretty entertaining product, didn't they, Antlers and Frontale, excuse me, at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. Yasuto Wakizaka gave Kawasaki the lead in the 18th minute. For some reason, a Kashima player decided to pass the ball to him on the halfway line, and Wakizaka accepted the invitation, basically, of the freedom of the Kashima half. He dribbled to the edge of the D and fired past Yuya Aoki. But a terrific goal to equalise by Everaldo with 15 minutes left. His header, stunning header, was saved by Junsung Ryong, but Everaldo pounced on the rebound and stroked home from 6 yards. But there was more to come, more drama to come in stoppage time, when the Antlers captain Kento Misao was shown a straight red card for a tackle on Hokuto Shimoda, the Kawasaki substitute. Misao pulled one of those faces that he is well known for when he makes a pretty ordinary tackle. Sam, I don't necessarily think he went through Shimoda with his studs, but the referee certainly had a good view of it. So in his opinion, that was a straight red. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I think the right decision has been made in terms of the red card. I don't think it was a malicious tackle necessarily, but the studs are up. He catches him fairly high, so I think it's a definite red card. The issue that I have with the whole situation is, firstly, Kawasaki were on a break in stoppage time. I think it was like 3-on-3 after this tackle had been made. So he stops that, and then he doesn't add any time on, even though he's gone over and made a red card, and the time that it takes Misao to get to walk off the pitch. So he doesn't add that time on. So that frustrated me, and it definitely frustrated Neil Debnam in his blog. I think he doesn't share your opinion on Everaldo and how good his header was and his general conduct in the game. I think there was one incident where Everaldo went through and he was caught probably in his waist, and it was a free kick. Everaldo was pretty convinced that he should have had a penalty, and he was going down, rolling around, holding his chest. So maybe he doesn't lend himself to opposition fans, but I think he's a fantastic footballer. So the header, I mean, really deserved to go in, the first header, because the athleticism he shows, that he leaps so high above everyone else, just and a perfect, powerful header down low, which forced the save, and then he's on hand to put the rebound in. But I just think he's just got better and better as this season's gone on, once him and Kashima, to an extent, have settled into this season. And I think next season, Mr. Olunga might have to watch out, because I think Everaldo might bag quite a few goals next year.
All right, there you go. Big call from Sam. He's going early. And, it appears that now that Leandro has shaved off his funky beard, that Neil has moved on to another Brazilian with somewhat funky facial hair as the direction of some of his ire. But Everaldo, he certainly has made a terrific impact this season, and really coming into his own, especially at the end of the season. And another goal to his tally here to equalise for Antlers on the evening. And it finished 1-1 at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, as it did down at the Edion Stadium when Hiroshima hosted Yokohama FC. The goals are all done and dusted inside the first half hour here. Yuki Kobayashi arrived at the back post to head home Kohei Tezuka's cross from the right and give Yokohama FC a 10th minute lead. Shortly after, Hiroshima captain Sho Sasaki's headed goal from a corner didn't stand for some reason that evaded me, but just before the half hour, a just onside Ezekiel chested down a long ball over the top from compatriot Douglas Vieira and finished smartly. Not a lot happened until the last 20 minutes, Sam, when the woodwork got a workout at both ends. Firstly, the veteran Hiroshima keeper Takuto Hayashi did superbly to tip Kazunari Ichimi's point-blank shot onto the post. Then Hiroshima substitute Yuya Asano saw his shot deflected up and onto the bar, but then neither side could find a way through at the end. So from the highlights, at least, it appeared that 1-1 was just about the right result in this one.
Yeah, I thought it was quite an even game. It ebbed and flowed a little bit. I thought Yokohama started very well and deserved their equaliser. I'm with you. I don't have a clue why Sasaki's goal was disallowed. I don't know what the referee has seen, but he's seen something. So, okay, fair enough. And Yeah, it was a decent goal for Ezekiel. I think they'd lost possession, Yokohama, and Maguinho had already made his way up the field to join the attack. So he was caught out in that right-back position. Ezekiel timed his run just about well enough, and it's a good finish. And yeah, second half, both teams had their chances. There was, yeah, as you mentioned, the two that hit the woodwork, but nothing else. I wouldn't say that was clear-cut, and I wouldn't say either team had done enough to win that game. So I think, yeah, a fair result in that one.
Yes, indeed. All right, so the last game we've got to review from the match day took place up at the Sapporo Dome, and it finished at 1-1 between Consadole and Sagan Tosu. Again, a goalless first half here before we again have a differing opinion between the J-League and all other rational statistical outlets. The J-League is still giving Thiago Alves Tosu's opener in the 55th minute, even though his shot basically across the face of goal went in off Sapporo defender Takuro Kaneko. That's a 55th minute goal. According to the J-League, it's for Thiago Alves. According to everyone else, it's a Kaneko own goal. The new handball law, Sam, shortly afterwards, Tosu surely should have had a penalty. Or were you going to spring to the defence of one of your favourites, Akito Fukumori? Was this just too close to call when Tomoya Koyamatsu's shot deflected off of Fukumori's arm from literally a yard away?
No, I'll be professional. With the rules as they are, I think it's a penalty. I don't like it when it's such a close proximity, but his arm is a little bit away from him. It definitely hits that arm, so I think it should be a penalty for Sagan Tosu. If you're going to put this rule in, it has to be dealt with consistently. And this was quite an easy one, I thought, to look at. It was quite obvious that it hits his hand. So I think it's a poor decision, and Sapporo got away with one.
Yes, indeed. And shortly after, they equalised in the game. Just 3 minutes after he'd come off the bench, a friend of the podcast, Jay Bothroyd, earned Sapporo a point with a superb left-footed strike beyond Park Il-gyu, of course, the on-loan keeper from Yokohama F. Marinos, in the 63rd minute, though it could have been all three late on for Consadole, only for Ryota Hayasaka's first-time shot from Bothroyd's clever flick to come off the post. But, it finished 1-1 up at the Sapporo Dome, and, two teams. Sapporo have obviously picked things up in recent times, and Tosu are on a reasonable unbeaten run themselves, even though a lot of them are draws. So, both of these sides, I was going to say, are playing out the string, but they're actually doing quite well towards the end of the season and going some ways towards rescuing what have been, pretty disappointing seasons to this point. So, there we go. There's all of the games that were played over the weekend reviewed. So let's briefly look ahead to what's to come in the next week. On Wednesday the 18th, the ACL clubs play their final league games before heading off to Qatar for the remainder of the ACL. We've mentioned it slightly already. The big one is at Todoroki, where Yokohama F. Marinos visit the team who will take their crown while they are away in the Middle East, Kawasaki. But thankfully for Stuart, and he's mentioned that he's going along to the game, and to all F. Marinos fans, Frontale cannot mathematically seal the title this midweek. A win will leave them 2 points from glory, but really only one, considering their ginormous goal difference advantage. Elsewhere on Wednesday, Kobe play their final home game of the season with Urawa, their visitors, in the Unfulfilled Expectations Derby. And FC Tokyo head up to Sendai to face a Ballon d'Or frontrunner, Shun Nagasawa, and his suddenly rampant Vegalta side. Then on the weekend, the remainder of a match day 28 will be played, keeping in mind, of course, that the ACL clubs will be out of the country by that point, and they've already played their match day 28 fixtures earlier on in the year. And depending on their result on Wednesday, Kawasaki could potentially seal the title away at Oita in one of the six games on Saturday. And even if they draw both of their games, Wednesday and Saturday, they could be crowned champions on Sunday evening if second-placed Gamba Osaka lose away at Urawa. So what do you reckon, Sam? By the time we reconvene next week, do you think Kawasaki will be champions?
I would assume so. I think they'll get at least a point against Marinos, and I think they'll go and beat Oita. I think they need to just wrap it up and let's get this over and done with. We don't want them to drag it out for too long. I think they deserve that title. I think it will be theirs by the end of the weekend. But yeah, Marinos will just be delighted that it's not going to be them that loses or whatever to give Kawasaki that title. So yeah, they were very delighted by Everaldo's goal, I'm sure.
Yes, Neil, not so much as you mentioned. All right then, so we'll leave it there for another week. Sam, yeah, terrific as always to catch up with you, and yeah, look forward to doing so again next week.
Yep, look forward to speaking to you again next week.
All right then, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Stuart Woodward for his time on this week's episode, our supporters on Patreon for their ongoing support, and of course you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the week in J1. Speak to you next week. Bye for now. Yeah, nah.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.